For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
The following episode was recorded in front of a live streaming audience on Saturday, December the 21st, 2024.
You know who you are?
Steven is my name.
Even Steven.
Will you say something, Steven?
Steven or else media.
You're listening to the Superman Super Show, episode number 78, The Talent Agency Fraud. Hello and welcome to the Superman Super Show. I'm a host. My name is Steven. And 1,000 miles over there to my right is another host, Mr. Ed Moore. Ed, how you doing?
Pretty good. Howdy, folks, and new listeners and recent subbers and all the other qualifications.
I still have in the show notes here, I forgot to delete this little note to say Merry Christmas.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
We are now officially entering into our banter segment of the episode, and I have something that I want to show you. I went to, I put this out, I think, on Instagram or something, but back in July, I got a Barnes & Noble gift card for my birthday, and yesterday, finally got the chance to use it, went into Topeka, Kansas, to the Barnes & Noble. And
when you reach right through that issue of Action Comics in the background, man.
Really?
Did everybody see that? Yeah, right through it. It's like, dude, okay.
It's magic. I got the Star Wars Archives book. And thank God for smartphones and the internet and wireless and all that junk, because this was wrapped in cellophane on the shelf. And there's nothing on it
that tells you what's in it.
Yeah, that gives you, you know, no indication other than this, which is this weird little insert that goes over the pages.
Curious. Okay.
And it says the best book on the greatest saga in the world. And of course, well, I can't not get the greatest book.
Well, I mean, yeah, that it kind of sells itself there.
Yeah. And if they're going to put it there, you know, it's true.
Right. It must be whatever's in it, even though I can't see what's in it. Right.
But yeah, so I just jumped on my phone and went to Amazon and looked it up to see what it was all about, and it looked pretty interesting. So yeah, it's just it's supposed to be it's the first three, and it's got a lot of pictures and junk like that. So yeah,
that should be a lot of fun. Surprised you didn't go for that new definitive Superman book that just came out.
What's that? I don't think I saw that.
Yeah, take me a minute to find it. Billy on social media has been talking about it. Superman Billy.
I haven't been reading a lot on social media lately. I just been trying to avoid it a lot lately.
Superman, The Definitive History by Edward Gross.
Oh, yes. I do remember seeing that. That popped up through Comixology, of all places.
Okay.
Last week or the week before last when it came out. You know, the ebook is like $20, which...
That is much better than the actual book.
Yeah. So I may check it out. I have a couple of Superman audiobooks, nonfiction, the history of Superman audiobooks. And I've listened to one, and I started the other, and I kind of want to get through those before maybe I buy anything else. But they did have, I came very close. Charles Phillips says that the definitive history is gorgeous. Haven't been able to pick it up yet, but friends have posted their pics online. You know, they didn't have it with the graphic novels in Barnes & Noble. Maybe they would have put it somewhere else. I don't know.
Maybe. Speaking of friends posting pics, I think all of the friend pics have pretty much been taken over by the recent style guide that people have been getting.
Oh, yeah. I've heard. I've
you're not aware of that, Stephen? The DC style guide?
No, I think I've seen some. I thought somebody post.
Nope. Maybe Stephen is aware of it, but there we go. But yep, you're moving. Okay.
Okay. Did I freeze?
You froze, and then both images went down and cycled and then came back.
Yeah. Charles says, Michael Bailey just posted an interview with Ed Gross on his It All Comes Back to Superman pod too. Okay, cool.
Saw that too. But are you familiar with the DC style guide, Stephen?
Yes, I think I have seen some pictures of that being posted.
That I have one on order, I guess because I didn't order it from the source. Mine is taking a little longer to get to me. I guess everybody that's getting them must have ordered them directly from the publisher. At a premium, I might add, if you ordered it from the publisher, whereas if you ordered it from the secondary market, you could actually have gotten it cheaper substantially. Yeah. Mine isn't supposed to ship until Christmas Day, so I'll probably get mine around the turn of the year.
Yeah. They did have a Superman, a Golden Age Superman collection at Barnes & Noble that I picked up first, and I was going to get it. I think it had the first 25 stories, or the Superman stories from the first 25 Action Comics issues. Mm-hmm. And then all five of the first five Superman issues.
I think that one just came out.
Yeah.
Very familiar.
I had it in my hand and I was going to get it. And then I thought, you know what? I just read all these.
Pretty much. I mean,
I've read them all. I've got them all on, through Comixology. So I didn't get it.
In fairly recent history, too. Yeah. So, I mean.
And I almost picked up that first giant G.I. Joe collection that Image Skybound put out, but I had it on my Christmas list for my kids, and I called my daughter over and I said, should I get that? She goes, yeah, I wouldn't get that today.
Okay. Then there we go. Okay.
So that's something to look forward to. It's big.
Cool.
All right. Any banter?
Anything I was going to introduce, I'll introduce in the next episode so that we have something there too.
Yeah, I don't have anything for the next one.
Cool beats.
All right, so today we're looking at the Talon Agency fraud, which is the second story to appear in Superman number 10. It's written by Jerry Siegel with art by Paul Cassidy. Superman number 10 has a cover date of May/June 1941, but an approximate on sale date of March 5th, 1941, according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics. And here is what happened in the story. Lois nearly quits her job when a talent agent, Mr. Grady, tells her he can make her a movie star. Clark suspects trouble and finds that Grady is a scam artist. The reporters interview Mrs. Walburn, one of Grady's victims, and get confirmation of Clark's suspicions. Superman busts into Grady's office and recovers his records. The crook tries to stop him, but Superman carries him around the city until Grady is ready to confess to the women he victimized and turn himself over to the police. I feel like this was a standard story plot in many 80s sitcoms.
Oh, okay.
Minus the superhero aspect.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
I feel like most sitcoms had an episode where somebody got sucked in by a talent agent that you had to pay money to.
Right.
And thought they were going to be a big star.
Yeah. Of course, they can't guarantee anything, so they're not actually like stealing your money. The money's a retainer, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
That's right. What'd you think of this one?
It was entertaining. The two that we'll be discussing today, I read back to back, and they both felt very similar, and they both kind of left me with the same feeling, which was, okay, I'm not upset that I read them. Superman Golden Age stories, you know what I mean? Since the onset, they've moved up as far as interest a little bit, but a while back, they still have plateaued as far as, I guess, at this point in time, what they're willing to do. So there was nothing outstandingly unfortunate about the story or the art. Both of them were, they kept me entertained and kept me interested in the story. I was able to finish reading both of them, which is a big deal for me, because anymore I'll pick up I don't know how many comic books on a weekly basis and read 8 or 10 pages and then not pick it up again. That one didn't do it. So So there are some things I think in this one that I was wanting to point out as we get to it. Yeah, it was this story. And I apologize again. The two stories that I read just seem so similar that keeping them strictly apart, unless I'm looking at them, is a little difficult just off the top of my head. But, well, plus I read them first thing in the morning on a Saturday when I've been getting up early all week and not today. So the brain matter was a little, plus it's cold and snowy outside. So everything was working against me as far as understanding what the heck I read. But I was able to cope pretty well.
Yeah, taken by itself, it's fairly standard Superman Golden Age fare. You know, nothing special about it, nothing exciting. It's a pretty standard story. When you compare it to the first story in this issue, the one we talked about, in the last episode, The Invisible Luther.
Right.
The Invisible Luther was so much fun.
Yes.
And so then you go from that to this, and it's like, there, like you said, there's nothing wrong with this story. There's nothing. I didn't throw my tablet down in disgust and start stomping on it. I'm going to go back in time and sue the creators for wasting my time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was fun. I think, we're seeing Superman, of course, get back to, I don't know if you would, wouldn't be considered social justice. It's more of a street level. The guy's a fraudster. He's a con man, basically, right? He's a dude who poses as a talent agent, but doesn't really do anything for anybody. He just takes their money
I think you would like classify this as the crime of the day kind of story.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
Yeah,
and plus too, if you really really enjoyed or they put seemingly more effort or energy into the first story in the issue. Typically, there have been 4 stories per Superman issue, so you can't keep that up necessarily. So the second story, if the first one was, really had the feels, well, the second story probably isn't going to be able to maintain that anyway. So and I don't mean it in a bad way, but there'll be a letdown, just because they had this really cool idea and then, well, we have some other ideas. It's like, okay, well, that's fine. You have 4 chances in this one book to really knock it out of the park. And if you do it on one, hitting a home run every 1 out of every 4 times, boy, that'll definitely keep you in the major leagues. So, that's not a bad average.
Yeah. And if you use a TV analogy, especially since we talked about 80s sitcoms earlier, you got a season of TV that's 22 to 24 episodes. There's the, handful, 4 to 6 episodes that are just really, really good TV. And then the rest is just kind of filler to get us to get us to that stuff.
Get us to the point. Yeah. So it's, up and down or however you want to describe it. But this was, and again, like you said, I don't think there was anything wrong with this story. I can't say that it was not good.
Yeah.
For what it did, what it added to the mythos, it's fine. There are no 20 years from when this came out, people will remember that there is no major key, no minor key, none of that. It's just a solid Superman story. Maybe some characters that they could bring back, maybe the bad guy, or maybe they could put one of the models was there and we didn't know about it. And years later, she came back for some, So it's like, it's okay.
Well, let me take us through the story here. We open up in the Daily Planet. Lois is staring into her pocket mirror from I guess her purse, and she's just loving her reflection. She's loving it. And Clark comes up and he wants to know what it is that she's looking at. What's got you so excited, basically? And she shows him her mirror and she goes, "It's my reflection. It's me." And then we learn that, of course, she's represented now by this guy, Mr. Grady of Grady Talent Enterprises. But I guess it does say here on the second page, Mr. Grady tells her that she might have a great career ahead of her on stage and screen.
Right.
So she's going to be an actress. Perry White comes over, because I guess I should back up the very first panel in this story. Once you get past, you know, we have these, we've talked about them before, that very first top panel, which kind of gives you a teaser on what's coming in the story. But once we actually get into the story, everybody in the Daily Planet bullpen, they're just depressed. They're unhappy. They're sad. And it's because Lois is leaving to become an actress, to become a superstar. And Perry White brings that up. And Lois actually refers to him as Perry. Is this the first time?
I think so. And also note, we see his face.
Yes, we got a full-on Perry White face. Not only his face, but he's not sitting behind his desk. This might be the first time we've seen him just up and around actually doing something other than sitting behind his desk.
We are now aware that he's not confined to a chair.
That's right.
He is mobile.
He's not like that robot receptionist from the Baxter Building in the Fantastic Four.
Right. Or what was his name? Davros, the leader of the Daleks, confined to the wheelchair.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, that was kind of a deep stab there. Yeah.
British robots. Ask your nerd friends.
So Clark and Lois then go to the Talon agency so that she can show Clark that Grady is on the up and up, because Clark, of course, is suspicious, which I think if I was Lois at that point, I might be a bit offended. You know, if Clark's immediate go to is like, yeah, you're being screwed with. There's no way you can be an actress.
But in reality, shouldn't Lois be suspicious as well?
Lois should be. If of the two of them, Lois should be the most suspicious, which I guess we learn here that Lois is super vain.
Or she really, really wants to be an actress.
Yeah.
And so she's blinded by that possibility. I mean, it's never come up before, but perhaps nobody's ever asked. So. Yeah.
But they go to the Talon agency, and we get my favorite bit from this issue, and it's when they walk into the makeup room where there's a lot of women getting their hair done and putting on makeup. And Clark, I guess, assumes that they've walked into a dressing room.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's immediately embarrassed and wants to leave, because I guess he's afraid he's going to see naked women. And Lois, who is wearing, is this the one where she wears the Green Arrow hat?
I don't think so.
No, it's not. It is a green hat. It does have a feather coming out of it.
Yeah.
But it's not a pointy one, which we'll see in the next story.
Her hat here looks more like a beret.
Yes.
With a big feather through it.
But she tells him to calm down. It's just the makeup room. They meet Mr. Grady, who looks a bit like Mr. Rourke from Fantasy Island.
Yes.
He's wearing the full-on white suit with a bow tie. I guess that might be considered a tuxedo, maybe a white tuxedo.
Maybe. Yeah. Just minus the tails. No tails.
Yeah. And he's got the little pencil thin mustache that is separated in the middle. So just the two little bits of mustache and his hair's all slicked back. So immediately I'm suspicious of the guy. You don't have to tell me anything about him, but there's something about all white tuxedo, slick back hair, pencil thin mustache. Immediately, yeah. I'm suspicious.
Right, it's triggering all these tropes and memes that we've run across over the years. It's like, okay, bad guy, but they haven't told us yet.
If he was in a club, maybe I'd be okay. But
but only if it were a club in the 1920s in Shanghai. That's the only place that would work.
Right, because he does appear to also have a flower on his lapel. Mm-hmm. But it, too, is white. So it's just represented by a circle there on his lapel. But yeah, I think anybody who comes to work in even I wouldn't consider running a talent agency kind of a dull drudgery type of office job. But still, it's not he's not a club owner.
Right.
I guess he's working in the talent industry, quote unquote.
Well, but he's still not in the public eye, and you would think that that's what that outfit would be for.
Yeah, so for him to come to work in a full all-white tux, the only thing that's not white is his black bow tie. I'm immediately suspicious of him. But there's a woman there already who is very upset. Is this the... Did they give her name here at all? I don't see her name.
I don't think so.
She's very upset because she was promised a bunch of things, and she's given money, and she wants the results from her training.
Now, is this the woman later on who was said to be the opera singer?
No, the opera singer is an older lady.
Older
big lady.
So that's two people that we have seen that are that are distressed with their handling with this agency then.
Yeah. But Lois introduces, well, because it's here that we learn that through this woman who's complaining to Mr. Grady, it's here that we learn that this is one of those talent agencies where you make your payment, you pay them up front for quote unquote training. And Clark immediately finds that suspicious, which you should, because a real talent agent isn't going to get paid until you get paid. That's their impetus to get you work so that they can make money. But Lois introduces Clark to Mr. Grady and tells Grady that she's invited Clark because Clark thinks that Grady is a crook. And that doesn't seem to offend Grady. He just, you know, oh, well, we're a legitimate business. And so Clark counters with, you charge your clients for training. Isn't it your job to get them work? Isn't it your job to place them? Why would you be charging them? And that's what takes Grady over the edge and just kicks him out. Don't you tell me what I can and can't do. Get out. And they leave. Lois tells Clark that she thinks that he deserved it.
Lois is on Grady's side.
Yeah, yeah, she's still on Grady's side. But she got her money back because then we go immediately there to back to the Daily Planet offices. Perry White is back behind the desk,
sitting at the camera over his shoulder. Yeah. Yeah. So the beginning part was an aberration. They were like, "Oh no, what did we do? We gotta put him back."
Yeah, everything is now right with the world because Perry White is where he's supposed to be,
over the shoulder, looking at Lois and Clark in front of him. Yeah.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
And now, back to the Superman Super Show.
Yeah, but she tells Perry that she got her money back. So we didn't actually see that, but apparently she got her money back.
Yeah.
Clark, then he wants to go do some further investigating, but not as Clark Kent. He wants to do it as Superman. So he changes into his Superman garb. He leaps out the window. We now know he's flying, and we get a quick moment of he's not quite hanging on that windowsill. It's like he drops out of the sky.
I didn't really put that. I don't think it really counts. It's like he's catching himself there.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though, you know, because we're still technically, I guess the creators were up in the air about whether or not he's flying. Retrospectively, we're saying that he's flying now based on. Yeah. But in this instance, he literally is free falling. He's dropping out of the sky and he catches himself on the windowsill, which surprised he didn't do any damage. He's got to be careful with that stuff.
Yeah, really.
And he makes mention that he is so used to entering through windows that it's beginning to be second nature to him.
He shouldn't say that out loud.
No,
that's not good.
Sounds like a Batman thing.
Something. Yeah. Yeah.
But he breaks in because he forces the window open. He goes into the office and immediately he opens up the first desk drawer and right away there's a gun, which immediately in Superman's mind, well, if this guy's got a gun, he's a bad guy. And that's not the world we live in today.
Certainly not.
That wasn't the world maybe 20 years ago at this point, 20, 40 years ago even. Everybody had guns.
Well, I'm not sure at this time it necessarily should mark him because this gentleman runs a business and his business probably is a cash transactional business. People come in and give him money. Well, he's not going to keep all that money in his office. He's going to deposit it somewhere. Well, when he's walking around at night after the business closes, going to the bank to deposit, he'll carry a gun in case some mall comes up and wants to knock him over or something like that. So it's like, that's not that fishy to me.
Yeah, Superman's really judgmental here when he finds that gun, because he says out loud, "A gun seems to me an honest businessman wouldn't have to keep a deadly weapon in his desk."
Yeah, not true.
It's like, hey, Superman, you know what? A letter opener can be considered a deadly weapon, so just take it down a notch, buddy.
Well, not all of us have impenetrable skin and, right. and whatnot, you right. know, so.
So the gun is all he's found so far when Grady arrives and Superman hears him coming into the office, and then comes my next
this
favorite.
This panel is awesome. This is awesome.
I really had to study this panel and read it 3 or 4 times to really quite understand.
Oh, man, this is phenomenal physique. Billy says apparently Superman's never been to a 7-Eleven. Well, yeah, probably not. As far as carrying a weapon, I presume, is the reference. Yeah.
Yep. Remember when 7-Elevens were actually just open from 7 to 11?
Yes.
Yeah.
I actually remember 7-Elevens. Now I don't know that I could tell you where one's at. They've been bought and name changed and whatever. So
I feel like we had one up until the last couple years in Lawrence, because I remember telling my kids, well, you know why it's called 7-Eleven? It's because they were open from 7 to 11. And nobody was open to 11 back then. When 7-Eleven came out, people were like, 11 o'clock? Are you crazy?
Yep.
But so as Grady is coming into his office, Superman leaps up, grabs the top of the doorway, pulls himself up, and basically he planks, but in midair. He's just holding himself up by one hand. He's literally lying in midair vertically, holding himself up with just one hand, because that is how awesomely strong he is.
That is core muscles from hell. I'm sorry. Yeah. There's like you said, he is, you know, planking, but he's planking in air with just one hand holding the top of the jam. And so it is supporting, you know, whatever, 210 pounds of his body, whatever Superman weighs.
Yeah.
Just from... looks like he's got 3 fingers and maybe the palm and the part of his forearm on this top of this door jamb.
Yeah.
And the rest of him is held out straight at that same height. So he's planking out at about 8 feet, looks like, I'd say, over top of Grady when Grady walks in. Grady walks right underneath him to go to his desk.
Yeah. And it makes sense. I mean, when I saw this, I was immediately like, what the frick is going on here? But sure, he is massively super strong. It makes sense that he would be able to hold himself in a position like that. Now, do I believe that the woodwork could take that kind of weight, the way it's distributed on that wood?
That's another matter. I didn't think of that, but yeah.
I think the woodwork, I mean, yeah, they built everything to last back then, right? That's what they always say, you know?
Yeah, but still.
It's not like he's hanging straight, you know, he's would that be perpendicular to the ceiling and the floor?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or no, so, parallel.
Parallel. That's right. Yeah, he's floor. Parallel. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's another one of these. I always, you know, we make jokes all the time how when it comes to reading about a character who can fly and who can do all these crazy superhuman things and how we can suspend our belief when it comes to stuff like that. But I just cannot, when somebody walks into a room and there's somebody literally hanging above him. I mean, Superman, look at that image. He might be half a foot above Grady.
He's probably about 2 foot over him. No, Grady, look at the size of the door.
Yeah.
The door, which actually, this is a huge freaking door from perspective, because to the top of the opening of the door, there is a good foot and a half or so between the top of Grady's head. Either that or Grady is like 4 foot tall. Yeah. I mean, but yeah. And then, you know, you've got the door frame and you've got the molding over the door. So you've got another 6 or 8 inches there. And so I think he's about 2 feet. If he is, Superman is at the same level as the molding and not has fallen some and is still holding on. So,
yeah.
But what gets me is, let's say Superman is 6 foot tall, let's say. So Grady walks in and 6 feet away from him are Superman's feet. Right. And his peripheral didn't catch that something is in the air that far away from him. Now,
exactly.
Right above him, of course, you know, we never see right above us unless we look. But out, I mean, my peripheral from my body extends about a foot and a half or 2 feet, and I can start to see at my height on either side of my peripheral vision. So 6 feet out.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean,
so
if he was pressed flat against the wall above the door.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I would get that. I totally get it.
If he was standing with his back against the wall, Grady would never see him.
As soon as Grady started coming through the doorway, he should see his feet out there.
I don't know.
There's just this thing when it comes to fiction, whether it's TV, movies, comics. As soon as you put somebody in the air above somebody else, everything above their eye line just becomes invisible.
Right. And they never see it.
It just drives me crazy for some reason. But so the guy comes in, completely misses the fact that there's a dude hanging in the air above him, picks up the phone to deal with somebody named Walburn, who we'll meet later. He refers to her as a battle axe. And as he gets on the phone, Superman does this thing where he then drops. He's still holding on to the molding. He drops, swings through the doorway out to the other, to the outer room, and then back up so that he's sitting on the molding above the door.
Which you can see is drawn much thicker than what the molding on the other side of the room, other side of the door was. So.
Very, very much so.
Yeah.
And then, and again, Grady, I mean, maybe his office is like the size of a football field. I don't know, but you think he would at least sense that movement.
Yeah.
This disturbance in the air, maybe.
Something. Especially if he thinks, see, that's what gets me. If I'm in a room full of people, I don't feel that way.
Yeah.
But if I'm in a room by myself, my personal space is huge, and I notice movements or I notice more sound or stuff, you know, so it's like, so he's in this big office, maybe both of these rooms, by himself, and Superman moving around doesn't trigger anything for the dude. It's like, well, you are one mellow dude to not, okay.
Now, I do like that when he's swinging through the doorway, they do draw him so that he's holding his cape to his body. So he is reducing the sound. We don't have the sound of a flapping cape as he's swinging through the doorway. But still, you think the wood at the least there would be a lot of creaking on that wood.
Something's got to make noise.
Yeah.
But nope, Superman's too good for that.
But he gets up there and he's hanging out on the molding above the door on the other side of the wall now, and he's listening in to Grady's conversation on the phone. He's calling Mrs. Walburn to respond to the numerous letters that she has sent him, and he's decided to go ahead and come on over and visit her to discuss the matter, and tells her that he's going to be over directly. And he leaves, he gets in his car. He now is wearing a white hat to go along with his white suit. And actually, the tie on this page, maybe, I don't know, the tie on this page is white.
It was red on the page before.
Yeah.
And then
mysterious color-changing bow tie that he's wearing.
Yeah, when we first met him, it looks like it was black. So, yeah.
So he gets in his car, and then Superman, again, does something that you would assume would make a lot of noise, and that's to, it says he streaks down, so I don't know if he jumped out the window, I don't know, but suddenly he is behind the car, and he swings underneath the car, and he's holding on to it from underneath as the guy drives along. Another one of my favorite moments comes up here, and this I think I'll chalk this up as my favorite actual use of superhuman, Superman's abilities, because Grady is racing through the streets. He's upwards to 70 miles an hour through these metropolis city streets, and he's not paying attention. He's so angry. He's not paying attention, and a woman steps out into the street in front of the car, and the car is about to barrel into her. There's no way that Grady can stop in time. So Superman just reaches down and digs his hand into the, his fingers into the pavement, digging trenches into the pavement with his hand to bring the car to a stop, which Grady just chalks up to, huh, I guess my brakes were better than I thought they were. Must be a loud car, because you think that would make a lot of noise.
Yeah, something.
So we get to Walburn. Oh, God, I forgot her name. Yeah,
Walburn.
We get to Miss Walburn's house. I do enjoy the page where we get to Walburn's house. We get one panel seeing the car with Superman's cape shooting out the side of it from underneath.
Yes, underneath, yeah.
I like that artistic choice. And it's one of those moments because, of course, everybody is talking out loud and he's driving. He avoids hitting the woman because Superman brings the car to a stop. And that's when Grady is saying out loud that, I guess my brakes are better than I thought they were. And Superman underneath the car hears him. So he says out loud, if Grady only knew, which in turn, Grady didn't hear Superman. So, yeah. Comic books. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
But we meet Walburn. She is, I guess, I don't want to say that she's what you'd expect from an opera singer, but she's an older woman. And she's paid Grady thousands of dollars. And he has done squat for her with that money. And it's at this point that he basically tells her, yeah, there's nothing I can do for you. You suck. I can't get you any work. Yep. You're a terrible singer. And so she kicks him out. The only thing she can do at this point is to kick him out, because she threatens to sue him to get all her money back. And that's when he points out, well, if you sue me, then you'll have to live with the embarrassment that you got tricked into the scam, that you are gullible enough to pay me thousands of dollars. And then people are going to find out that you don't have any talent. And so she's like, all right, you got me there. Well, at least I can kick you out of my house. Get out. She obviously has money, though, because she's got a butler.
And pearls on just a normal, regular day kind of thing. She's wearing a big set of pearls.
And she was able to pay him thousands of dollars. So Superman is sitting in a tree and he watches Grady pull away. And so that's when he goes, he telephones Lois and he tells her that he needs to see her there. He needs to see her at the Daily Planet. He's got something important to tell her. And when she arrives, okay. This is another one of my favorite moments. When she arrives, Superman is writing the story, and he tells her to wait because he's finishing up the story. He's typing it out. He hands the story into Perry White and basically tells Perry, here's the story. I can't prove anything right now. It's all conjecture. So just hold on to it because I'm going to go prove that everything.
Let me get the proof, and then you can publish the story.
Yeah. I love that because Perry even tells him, oh, so you've turned seer, have you? You can see into the future, basically. And he's like, yeah, if you can prove all this stuff, this will be a great story. And maybe this happened a lot where a reporter's like, look, I have the time to go ahead and write the story now. I know I'm going to be able to prove all this right. So I'll get it written now, and then I'll go prove everything. But it's not like a word processor where you can go in and change stuff real quick if you find something different. But
you could argue that even now the media does this and they never get the proof, it's already been published. You know,
That's true.
At that time, we would hope that that is not how it occurred, that you had evidence and then you published. Whereas now it's gotten to the point where evidence, just publish it,
As long as you have a headline that'll draw people in.
That's it. As long as you get the eyeballs, does it really matter?
Yep. But Clark takes Lois to see Mrs. Walburn because he wants you to have her tell Lois, this was my experience. I'm one of Grady's victims. And Lois, she's skeptical until she hears the story. And then it's just like, oh, okay. Yeah, he's a fraud. And she immediately in pure Lois Lane fashion, she's ready to go give Grady a piece of her mind.
Yep. Even though she got her money back. So, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. But, he toyed with her vanity. He made her believe that she was going to be, I don't know any of the big movie stars at the time.
Myrna Loy.
Sure. I don't know that name.
I don't. Oh, you've never heard of Myrna Loy?
Nope.
I'm not sure if she was active in the, what is this, 41, 42 when 41, this yeah. came out?
41? 40. Yeah, 41.
I'm sure Billy will pop in here in a minute as our movie aficionado and let us know. Myrna Loy was alive 1905 to 1993. So in the 40s, she would have been in her mid-30s. So yeah, I can hardly wait to until I face that human jackal. So,
oh yeah, that's something that Lois says. But Grady will pay, Billy points this out, but Grady will pay for his deception. Come on, Clark, I can hardly wait until I face that human jackal.
Yep.
I love Lois.
Jean Harlow, William Powell, those were approximately the same time as Myrna Loy. Oh yeah, Myrna Loy was definitely acting at this point. There's Billy. I knew he'd know.
Billy with the info, with the 411.
He watches all those black and white movies, man.
So, so they go, so that Lois can go confront Grady. I guess they take a cab, and when they arrive, Lois storms out of the cab. She hasn't even reached the building yet, turns around, and Clark is gone.
He's already took off to change.
And I like how they point out here, they don't do this too often. A lot of times when they show him changing into Superman, they don't do a really great job of showing us that he's doing it at like super speed. And it almost looks very mundane, especially when they show him some of those early issues where he was sitting on the bed, lacing up his boots or buckling his belt. Yeah, exactly.
He does it like we do it. Yeah.
It's just very disappointing to see from Superman. Billy says Myrna Loy was acting as early as the silent era.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Before they became the talkies.
Right. Before talkies. She was acting before talkies.
But in this panel, he's changing into Superman, and they mention in the narration that Clark transforms himself to Superman so swiftly that his figure seems to blur. And then he races up the stairs. He races through the makeup room where all the women are in there still getting their hair done and putting on makeup. And he runs through so fast that they can't see him. But of course, there's a powerful gust of wind that goes through the room, and they're just like, oh, well, freak gust of wind that
right,
came through.
Right.
Which, you know, and if they're in a tall building and the windows are open, I get that. It's pretty windy up there.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So Superman arrives in Grady's office before Lois gets up there. He finds Grady's safe and he rips it open and he pulls, I guess, the records, Grady's records out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And Grady busts in and confronts Superman. What are you doing with those records? And Superman just responds with a great, give you one guess. And Grady tries to put him in a headlock, which is funny.
Right. Oh, and also, take note. Apparently, Grady doesn't know who this is.
Right.
I'll bring this up again in a little bit. But yes. Here, Grady doesn't know who this is. He has no clue.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages.
And now, back to the Superman Super Show.
I was hoping you would bring that up when it comes up, because when we get to it, I remember reading it thinking, we've talked about, Ed brings this up a lot, so I bet he'll talk about this when we get to
one way or the other. Yeah. But here is a case where after, you know, however long that this thing has been occurring around town, that there are still people who don't know. Now, I don't think there have been any pictures published. So, okay, I can understand. But eyewitness accounts would have to describe what he's wearing, because it's very different from what normal people are wearing at the time. So if you saw him and he did things, for instance, Grady came in because he heard noise. The noise he heard was Superman ripping his safe apart with his hands.
Yep.
I don't know what kind of noise exactly that makes, but it has to be something rather memorable. So
yes,
you run into the office. He's holding the contents of the safe, At his feet is a safe that has been ripped apart like the big strong dudes do with the big thick phone books. You know, they throw it and then they just drop. Well, the dude's safe is at this person's feet ripped apart.
Yeah.
He's wearing this outrageous costume. No idea who this is. I don't know what he is or what he's doing. Oh, he has my records. I need to stop him. Yeah. And it's like, doll, really? You're in the entertainment industry and you don't know who this is?
So, yeah.
Okay. I'll step down now and we'll read the rest of the story.
Yeah, the sound of a metal safe being ripped in half, I couldn't even imagine what it would sound like because I don't know that it's ever happened.
Yeah, but you know.
Because of that, yeah, you would think, I don't know. So ultimately what I'm picturing is he runs into the room, he sees this character in this gaudy outfit, he has just heard a sound he has never heard before. But it had to have been very alarming and very loud. And so his mind takes in, here's a guy standing over my safe that has been torn in half. And then his mind, I guess, went into that fight or flight reflex. And
I guess,
his brain chose fight.
Yeah.
Which got him thrown against a wall.
Yeah, right. Thrown across the room. So that didn't work. So, you know, Superman... I think I would have just run away. Billy said, yeah, I think so. Especially if at this time you knew who this was. You ran into the room, opened the door, and you see the other way, just straight away the other way. But
it's the same thing, though, with the criminals that always, even the criminals that, you know, once it gets to the point where they know this is Superman.
Right.
We know that he's bulletproof. But
they keep going.
You know, yeah. We're going to continue. We're going to shoot him anyway, because maybe my gun is the gun that's going to kill him.
Right. Now, that does come up in the next story that we'll talk about.
Yeah.
All of these scenarios about recognizing, not stopping. And the writer does play with that in the next story. So, yeah.
Oh, and
but not here, this one.
Yeah. But I'll tease that. It's a great moment in the next story. Grady picks himself up off the floor because he basically comes up behind Superman and wraps his arm around Superman's neck, tried to put him in a chokehold. Superman flips him over the top of him and throws him against the wall. Grady picks himself up and has the balls to punch Superman right in the chin.
He just caught him. It was a lucky judo throw or whatever, you know.
And of course, that very next panel, he's like, ouch, is that chin of yours made of steel?
And here's your favorite.
Trouble, eh? Superman's response. We get, at least one A in this issue. I think we get in this story. Yeah. I think we get like seven of them in the next story.
In the next one, yeah, they're all over the place.
But and then Superman just does his thing where he just starts handling Grady bodily. First, he picks him up over his head. Then he holds him with one hand in front of him by the jacket. And then he climbs out the window holding Grady kind of on the shoulder. He's almost tucked under his arm, but not quite, and dangles him out the window and then brings him back in because this is...
Read Billy's comment.
So first Billy says, bulletproof, but guys still try to punch him. And then Super Dickory, the early years... Yes.
Now, is it what Superman is doing here? Isn't this called coercion? And nowadays it's illegal.
Yes, we've talked about this before. This is his MO, which he hasn't used in a bit.
Right. Yeah.
It's like most of the early stories, he was doing this all the time. We see him do it here, and I think we see him do it in the next story.
I think he does it in the next one too. Yeah.
He's basically dangling the guy out the window of this. They're pretty high up compared to the building that you see next to him, hangs him out the window and tells him to confess with the implied threat that he's going to drop him onto the sidewalk below
if he doesn't. Yeah. Okay.
And so he pulls him back into the office, asks Grady if he's reconsidered. Grady, again, just a set of steel balls on
this
guy.
That's right, man.
So this guy comes into his office after hearing an alarmingly loud, probably scary sound, sees his safe ripped in half, sees a gaudy man in a costume standing over the ripped open safe. He tries to subdue the guy. The guy throws him against a wall. He tries to punch the dude in the chin, finds out that Superman's chin is like steel, Superman just starts picking him up and throwing him around and hanging him out the building. And still, Grady at this point is like, fuck you.
That's because Grady is okay. His feet are on the ground. Yeah. He's in good shape. So he's like, nah, man, I ain't doing nothing.
So that's when Superman decides to kick it up a notch.
Yep.
He picks up Grady, jumps out the window with him, and just flies him around town from way up in the air. They plummet from the air at one point, scaring the crap out of him. He stops them from dropping out of the air by grabbing one of these flagpoles that never seem to have flags on them. Or is it a, it could be a clothesline pole. I don't know.
I thought it was a flagpole. Yeah, I think it's a flagpole on the end of it.
Yeah. But I, whenever I see stuff like this in these comics, there never seem to be flags on them. Spider-Man's always grabbing them and bouncing off of them and stuff. And
yeah, those are the horizontal ones right next to a window, and he jumps off of them or whatever. Yeah.
So we get a bit of a Christmas reference here when Superman then takes him to the top of a immensely tall smokestack and says, let's play Christmas, and I'm going to drop you down this chimney just like Santa. And that is when Grady has had enough and he's ready to confess. And so Superman brings him back to the Talon Agency. They come in through an open window where all these women are waiting. And what happens?
Including Lois?
Including Lois. That,
yeah, she's in the green. Yeah, all the women start like fawning over him because... Well, Lois uses the name, but at least the women do recognize that name. It's not a case of, you know, like I brought up, nobody's ever heard of him. So they are aware of the mystique behind the name, and Lois drops the name. So then all of these women that have been waiting in the talent agency to see Grady start fawning all over this individual that has been called Superman by Lois.
Yeah. So this is the first time. This is the moment that I was when I read it. I'm like, oh, I bet Ed's going to bring this up, because just like earlier, we talk about how can nobody recognize Superman? How do people not know about him yet? And here we are with this woman says, you mean that's the Man of Steel everyone's talking about? And
there
so
you go. Yeah, it's like, OK, thank you.
Yeah,
we
get our first moment where we learn that finally Superman is starting to become a known entity in Metropolis, that people are talking about him. I mean, good Lord, you have to assume that every one of Clark's articles mentions Superman, because if it wasn't for Superman, of course, he wouldn't have a lot of those articles. And most of the articles are about crimes that Superman foils. And so, you know, that the Daily Planet, at least, are reporting stories about Superman often. But like you said, we don't seem to have had any pictures printed of Superman just yet.
No. There is no, unfortunately, Peter Parker around to get pictures of the big hero yet.
Yeah, and we know that just from this one panel because, you know, these women didn't recognize him as Superman right away. It's not until Lois says his name.
Right.
And one of them says, gee, he's as handsome as they say. And so apparently amongst the social scene of women in Metropolis, they're talking about Superman. The criminal underworld, nobody's talking about Superman. But the eligible singles, that scene, that's Superman's all over that scene.
Right.
So they're back. So, all right. So he's got Grady back in the office, and Grady, again, one last time, he's going to try to be defiant now that he, like you said, he's back on solid ground, and he tries to tell everybody that Superman is a madman. He's, you know, he's the bad guy, and Superman grabs him one more time and tells him to repeat his confession loud so everybody can hear. And based on the thickness of the lettering in this word balloon, Grady is screaming at the top of his lungs, my talent agency is a fraud. I've never placed anyone. I profit solely through charging for worthless advice. And Superman hangs him on a coat hanger, jumps out the window, dresses back up as Superman, or dresses back up as Clark while Lois gets on the phone and calls the police. And then we get our final panel here where Grady is being put into the back of a paddy wagon. And
so once again, Clark gets the byline for the article, Because he submitted it before it was even done and then told him to publish it.
Right.
You know,
right.
Usually we see at the end of the stories that he somehow manages to get to the office first and submit the article. But here, he submitted it before it was even done and summed it up, tied a bow on it, and then said, okay, go ahead and publish that I gave you earlier today. I guess it's the same. So again, he scooped Lois, but it is in a different way this time than it has been the past several.
Yeah. He did it before there was really technically even a story.
He wrote the story before the story existed. And so he got it in that way. Yeah.
He wrote the story and then said, he made the story. I guess I better go make the story true.
That's it.
Lois even says it there in the final panel. Let's get back to the office, Clark, and tell White he can print that article you gave him. I would love to read the article because obviously Clark makes a lot of, you know, points out Grady's guilt. But because he doesn't know how to prove at that point that Grady's guilty, I'm assuming the article still contains nothing in the way of evidence. It's just... Right.
Probably,
this
yeah.
man is guilty, story
what,
over.
What he's guilty of, maybe some of the people affected, but it doesn't say anything about what he did or anything. Yeah, because he didn't know yet.
Right. And, you know, I think an essential part of a news article like that would be that Grady confessed to his crimes in front of multiple witnesses. Right. But since that hadn't happened at the time that he wrote the article, he can't include any of that.
Unless he knew that he was going to make him confess.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah. Or maybe it's like one of those articles that's like, in tomorrow's edition, we'll have more information and the evidence to back this story up.
More
basically.
Information to come.
Yeah.
Stay tuned tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the story. That's the story.
It was fun. It was, you know, it had some, like we pointed out, some things that don't make sense, but then they haven't made sense every time they've come up. Some new things that were maybe not making sense, like him planking off the top of the door jamb. That's pretty intense.
Yeah.
But you have to admit it is very, very creative. The ways that they did things in this story in particular, that the hiding under the car, which isn't new.
Yeah.
Showing his cape trailing so that we knew that he was still under the car. That is new. Trying to stop it, damaging the street. That was new. We haven't seen that before. Flying around, trying to get the bad guy to submit and confess. That's not new. We have seen that. So, I mean, there was a lot of both brand new things that are hard to believe and things we've seen before that are hard to believe. So it's like, okay, yeah.
I think, you know, simply coming off of the tales of the previous story, The Invisible Luther, and then the Action Comic. I don't remember which story it was from Action Comics that we read before The Invisible Luther, but they were both so, you know, they had brought back the, you know, the arch villain. They had brought back the super science. They had brought back the, you know, the crazy sci-fi sort of part that, you know, we love about Superman. So coming off of that into what is really a more pedestrian type of story, it makes you look at the story a little bit different. But yeah, like you said, there's a lot of good stuff in here. And Superman holding his cape as he's swinging through the doorway.
As he swung under the door.
That was really neat. We see Perry White walking around without his suit jacket on, and he's called Perry. That, you know, that was a pretty crazy thing to see.
We saw his face.
Yeah.
Finally.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a good story. I would call it. All right. So if we categorize Superman stories as into three levels, the bottom level, which not good stories, the top level, which is stuff like The Invisible Luther and the story with the orphanage where Superman's running around in the basement fighting the old guy with all the crazy
stuff
in the basement.
The torture room under the orphanage. Yeah, yeah, that is classic.
Those are the top. And then there's just the big
everything
middle.
In between.
Yeah. And this would fall into that middle category, but I think it would be at the top of that middle category.
Yeah, sure.
Because it was, it was a good story. It had a lot of fun things that happened in it, and a couple of firsts. So that was kind of fun. Yeah. I want to look back at that moment again where Superman stops the car from underneath, because as I'm kind of looking at that, it's funny because, you know, one of the things that we talk about a lot is how here we are, we have these stories that are 13 pages long, and there's so much packed into those 13 pages. And this one page, I think, is one of those examples where it's almost like they're going, well, I mean, we've got this page where basically the guy gets in a car and he's going to drive to this woman's house to tell her that he's dropping her as a client. We need some action on this page, because obviously this guy almost running into a woman on the street has nothing to do with the story itself. This, it doesn't further the story.
Right.
It doesn't give us any information that will help us solve any mysteries. It's just they had to inject a bit of action on this page. And I like it. I like that he stops the car literally with his fingers, just his fingers, digging into the asphalt. Yeah. And I want to see the guy, the city worker who comes, who stumbles across that later. I was like, what the hell happened here?
No doubt. What is that?
Yeah. Guess we got to patch this up. So, yeah. Again, I think we've talked about that before, too. I would really like to see just a series, a book like Damage Control for Marvel Comics. It's just about the people going around and fixing the stuff that
Superman. Based in Metropolis. Yeah. Yeah.
But instead of being a specialized group, you know, again, just some city worker that has to go out and patch up those gouge marks even if it's just a panel in the next story, we see in the background of a panel, some guy filling in these trenches with some asphalt. That would be great. I'd love that.
Yep.
All right. Anything else you want to say about this story?
No, I think I'm good.
All right, folks, that was the Talent Agency Fraud, the second story to appear in Superman number 10. Hey, folks, it's your boy, Steven. I'm just breaking in here real quick to let you know about a change we're making here at the Superman Super Show. This episode, the one you're listening to right now, episode number 78, represents the sixth episode of season 7 here on the podcast. Each season is 12 episodes long, and beginning here with season 7, we're going to start splitting the seasons in half. The first 6 episodes will be all about the Golden Age Superman stories, while the last 6 episodes of each season going forward will be all about post-crisis Superman. What that means for you is that when we come back in 2 weeks with episode number 79, Ed and I are going to be talking about The Man of Steel number 1 by John Byrne from 1986. And then the following 5 episodes, episodes 80 through 84, we're going to cover the rest of that Man of Steel miniseries from 1986. And then with episode number 85, that will be the start of season 8. And at that point, Ed and I will bring you 6 more Golden Age Superman episodes. So yeah, that will be the state of things going forward. 6 Golden Age episodes, then 6 post-crisis episodes, and so on and so on and so on. I don't like to speak for Ed, but I can say with firm confidence that we have both been having a ball with those post-crisis episodes, just like, you know, we have a ball with the Golden Age episodes. So, yeah, stick around, because we're going to keep talking about Superman, but now it's going to be from 2 different eras. Until then, I'm going to take you back to episode 78 as we wrap it all up. Here you go. All right, folks, that was the Talent Agency Fraud, the second story to appear in Superman number 10. That's all that Ed and I have to say about it. So until next week, folks, I'm Steven. That's Ed. And this was the Superman Super Show. Bye.
Ciao.
Ciao. We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Superman Super Show. Questions and comments can be directed to the Superman Super Show at gmail.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can help to boost our presence online by leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. The Superman Super Show is a presentation of Stephen or Else Media. For more nerdy content just like this, check out somanypodcasts.com or use the link in your show notes. Superman is a registered trademark of DC Comics and was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.
Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Action Comics magazine.
Oh, but wait, there's Superman. He'll save us. Superman! Superman! Wait, where are you going? Well, to hell with him. We'll have to deal with these marauders ourselves.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.